Well, a month or so ago, we finished studying the book of Ephesians, and what really impressed me with chapter 6 was spiritual warfare and spiritual armor and all that, that it comes down to character. And it really changed me when I realized that this is really what it's all about. It's about character, it's about character change. And that is what people see. We're here to glorify God. And what glorifies God is character. And here today in our nation at this time in our history, it's becoming more and more apparent that it's all about character. And that's what's going to make the difference. We can't just give lip service to what we believe in because it's not working anymore. People like, you've probably heard that, a sermon that you can see, not a sermon you can hear, but a sermon that you can see. And so a few weeks ago, we did a message on Daniel and character, a lot of character there. And I did put one together on Nehemiah, but didn't do it. He's got quite a character. And then the parable of the Good Samaritan, specifically, that's talking about Jesus' character because he's exemplified in the Good Samaritan. But what we're going to look at today is Moses. And there's a man with character. So we're going to start with his birth. And so it says here, now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. Well, how could he? it's been 400 years. But, it's a figure of speech, that maybe at some point they remembered who Joseph was and that Israel came there and Joseph had rescued the nation from famine. So here 400 years later, there arose a new king, Pharaoh, who didn't know Joseph. So that's kind of a play on words. And he said to his people, behold, the people of Israel are too many and too mighty for us. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply. And if war breaks out, they join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land. So they didn't want to lose them as slaves, and they didn't want them allying with their enemies. Therefore, they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with heavy burdens. And they built for Pharaoh's store cities, Pithom, I don't know how it's pronounced, and Ramses, verse 12. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied, and the more they spread abroad. And the Egyptians were in dread of the people of Israel. Then Pharaoh got this idea, and he said to the midwives, who were the ones that were delivering babies, and he said to them, when you serve as a midwife to the Hebrew women and see to them on the birth stool, if it is a son, kill him. But if it's a daughter, she shall live. But the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt had commanded them, but they let the male children live. So then in chapter 2, you find out that a woman, a Levite woman, she had a baby, and they didn't kill him, and they kept him for 3 months. And then she put him in this little basket made out of papyrus and stuck him in the weeds. And it just so happened to be that Pharaoh's daughter, that's where she took a bath. Of course, she didn't go there by herself. She had a whole contingency of attendants with her. And one of those young women happened to be Moses' sister, Miriam, who's my wife. she said, and so Pharaoh's daughter heard the baby cry. Oh, how cute. Oh, we can't let that one go. And then Miriam runs up and says, well, I just happen to know a Hebrew woman who's still nursing, and I could, take the baby and let him be with this lady, who happens to be his mother, but she didn't tell him that, and let him nurse him, which is exactly what happened. Pharaoh's daughter said, okay. And so Moses' mother gets her baby back for 3 years. And then after 3 years later, Pharaoh's daughter adopts him. And he's raised in the royal household. He's trained to be a leader. He's trained to be a general. And remember what Pharaoh had wanted to do. Let's see if we, verse 10. Yeah. And when the child grew older, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. So now, one of the baby boys that Pharaoh had wanted to kill is now his grandson. And she named him Moses because she said, I drew him out of the water. That's what Moses means, is I drew him out of the water. Everything Pharaoh did backfired. What did he want to do? He wanted to get rid of the Israelites. So he decides to kill the baby boys. Only one of them gets away, and now he's his grandson. So he doesn't, unbeknownst to him, he is now raising the leader of Israel. What does this tell us? God is sovereign. And people think they're working against God and they're going to do that. God works whatever he's going to do. And it's not what we think or what we plan. Here, Pharaoh thought he was going to get rid of him. And it just backfired. And here he is training the next leader of Israel. Everything bad thing that Pharaoh does turns out for good. We're going to see that through the whole Exodus story, or you will. Everything that Pharaoh meant for evil, God turned around and used for good. That sounds like what Joseph had previously said to his brothers. You'd meant it for evil, having me kidnapped and turned into a slave, but God used it for good. When we think things are going bad, God is still working. We may not see it, but we see here God was working and working and working in all these events for years. And then after a long time, you see things happening. God works with us people because we have wills. We're not machines, right? Where he programs them, you know. We have wills. Now, God is sovereign, but somehow he works. He works through our will. He works through our circumstances. We know what's happening in our nation right now, but we know that God's will prevail. Now, how things work? I mean, could you get a worse leader than Pharaoh? Well, who knows? I mean, that's... Let's see. But he still works through all of those things. In verse 11. So now, at first Moses is first three, and now he grows up all the way in verse 11. One day when Moses had grown up, he went out. You may know these stories. He went out to his people, and he looked on their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. And he looked this way, and he looked this way, and seeing no one, he struck down the Egyptian and killed him, and buried him in the sand. He'd taken matters in his own hand. Now, it may not have been the wisest thing to do, and as we'll see, it was a dangerous thing to do. Because if you remember in Germany and stuff, if anybody in a town that they'd occupied worked against the Germans, they'd get like 20 of them or more and line them up and shoot them. There would be reprisals. And that's what they were afraid of here. So when we get to the next thing here in verse 13, when he went out the next day, Moses, behold, two Hebrews this time were struggling together. And he said to the man in the wrong, why do you strike your companion? Verse 14. So the guy who was in the wrong says, well, who made you a prince and a judge over us? Good question, because we'll find out later it's going to be God, but that's 40 years off. Who made you? But it's the same idea is, look, if you do this, they may round up a bunch of us and kill us. You're not doing us any favor. Do you mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? Then Moses was afraid. And he thought, surely the thing is known. The cat's out of the bag that he'd killed an Egyptian. But in both cases, and we're going to see this as a character trait of Moses, it's selfless concern for the well-being of others. It's not fully developed here, and he's not very wise, but still, that is one of the things about Moses. Selfless concern for the well-being of others. Now, in verse 15, it got out. Pharaoh, his grandfather, his adopted grandfather, when Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and he stayed in the land of Midian. He went out in the desert and he sat down by a well. So this is, Moses is now 40. His life is divided into three 40-year periods. And you know, 40 is an important number in the Bible. So he's 40 now, and then he'll be out in the wilderness for 40 years, just like Jesus was in the wilderness for 40 days. And then he's leading Israel for 40 years. So he's 40 years old now. And he goes out in the desert and he sits down by a well. Now, see how God arranges circumstances. He always arranges circumstances. That's one of the ways, one of the main ways he works with us. He arranges circumstances. So the priest of Midian had seven daughters. And they came out, I was thinking of a joke, but I won't tell. You can think of your own jokes about that. Okay, so the laundry. Okay, I'm sorry. The priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came out and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. Then the shepherds, and these weren't nice guys, the other shepherds came and they drove the young women off so that they could get the water first. But there's Moses, and remember his character. He stood up and he saved them and he watered their flock. I don't know how many shepherds there were, but Moses drove all of them off. And then he turns right around and gets the water for them and waters the flock. This again is Moses's character. So here, look at some of the things here that I have about Moses' character. I thought they were important enough to write down. Moses was still intervening against injustice and righting wrongs. That's Moses. He was quick to act against oppression, even when he was alone, and the odds were against him. He did it anyway. He wasn't afraid. Then he does the work that seven young women were planning to do. He was not easily frightened. And he was generous and helpful to people he hardly knew, acting from principle rather than personal loyalty. A lot of people will work, it's tribalism, for their family or this or that. He just worked from principle. And he did not ask for a personal reward. He didn't ask for any money, nothing. He was doing what he felt was right, what he had to do, regardless of whether he was going to be compensated for this or not. And we're going to see that over and over as Moses continues to lead the children of Israel. God is preparing him. Through all of these circumstances, and I'm sure training in the wilderness, we don't know what happened, but God's preparing him to be the leader. So he rescued the young women, and they in turn, then in verse 18, when they came home to their father, Reuel, he said, "How is it that you've come home so soon? How'd you get your work done so fast?" Verse 19, and they said, "An Egyptian," so he was still wearing his Egyptian clothes, "delivered us out of the land of the shepherds and even drew water for us. And he watered the flock." Verse 20. So he says to his daughters, and we'll find out later his name's Jethro. He said to his daughters, "Then where is he? Why didn't you bring him home? Why have you left the man? Call him that he may eat bread." And Moses was content to dwell with the man because he couldn't go back to Egypt. So here, God provided him for him out in the wilderness, out in the desert, with a family, a already formed family that he could join and be part of it. And he gave Moses his daughter Zipporah. Verse 22, she gave birth to a son, and he called his name Gershom, for he said, "I have been a sojourner, a foreigner in a foreign land." Verse 23. During those many days, 40 years, many days? Yeah, I guess 40 years is many days. The king of Egypt died. So circumstances are changing. And the people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and cried out for help. They're praying, but they probably don't know how to pray very well because they've been slaves for 400 years. And when they came out, Moses had to reteach them about God. So they're doing the best they can. They don't know what they're doing, but somehow they're praying without even really knowing what they're doing. And yet their cry went up to God, telling us that our prayers don't have to be perfect, do they? We just need to do it. Their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God. He heard them. 400 years. How long do we have to wait? Here's 400 years, a long time. Verse 24. And God heard. God heard their groaning. And God remembered. And again, that's a figure of speech, as if God can forget. But God remembered, nice way of writing it, his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's an eternal covenant. It's still going on today. But he remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Verse 25, but it's still there. God saw the people of Israel, and God knew. God knew what was going on. 40 years later, right? He's in the wilderness for 40 years. Let's talk about 40 for a minute. Jesus was in the wilderness for 40 years. Who else spent 40 days, Ryan? Thank you. Who else spent some time in the desert? Jesus. Paul, he spent 3 years in Arabia. David, he took care of sheep and he fought off a bear and a lion. Daniel was in captivity and was in the lion's den. Nehemiah worked for a Persian king. What is this telling us? God trains over time. He doesn't just, oh, there you are in leadership. Okay, off you go. You look at the great leaders of the Bible, and we're going to look at some of them. They all went through training. They all went through difficulty, as we will see. God's training seems to be hard times. He does not make life easy. Difficulty is how he trains us. That's very un-American. We want it easy, we want it quick, and we want it convenient, and we don't want to wait. That is not how God works, and it's something we have to learn. We may have to learn more of it, but God is not about an easy life. He's not about a convenient life. It's just not his way. You can look at history. You can look at Abraham Lincoln. Oh my gosh. What God trained him. 30 years he became a lawyer. And he worked in a store. And people wouldn't get all their change. So he'd walk at night to their house to give them a couple cents back. Some of his business partners left him with the store. And he worked for years to pay off all the debts, even though they weren't his. Character takes time. Character takes living through difficulty to learn patience. Okay, chapter 3. Now, Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian, and he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness, and he came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord, you know who that is? This is called a theophany. And am I pronouncing that right? Okay. A theophany, well, big word, is where God shows up where you can see him. So the angel of the Lord wasn't just a regular angel. It was some type of vision of God himself. Some people say, I think with good reason, that they're pre-incarnate. Incarnate means before Jesus was born. Before he incarnate means in the flesh. Before Jesus was born, it means incarnate, and perhaps this was a incarnate appearance of Jesus. I'm not going to say that. Theologians believe that. But somehow, God himself is represented by the angel of the Lord, and we'll see that here. The angel of the Lord. Doesn't say God, but it says the angel of the Lord. But as we read on, it sure seems like God. The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire. When else have we seen fire? Day of Pentecost, right? Elijah, fire. So this is one of those things where God shows up in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. He looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. And Moses said, I will turn aside to see this great sight, why the bush is not burned. When the Lord, see, angel of the Lord, before, now, says the Lord. When the Lord saw him, that he turned aside, so Moses had to turn aside, God called him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses says, here I am. It's a bunch of things here. When God talks, I'm here. You know, when you call your children, come upstairs. Dead silence. You come up now. And my daughter, you go. Then finally, after three or four, what do you need? Right? It's still disobedience. What do you need? Anyway, Moses said, here I am. Well, who else said, here I am? In Samuel, when God was calling the young Samuel, the Lord came and stood calling at other times, Samuel, Samuel. What did he say before? Moses, Moses. Why? It's always twice. Samuel, Samuel. And Samuel said, speak, for your servant hears. He responds. And that is a huge deal. When God speaks, here I am. Here I am. And that happened with Samuel. So, and he runs over and he thinks it's Eli, the priest before him. I'm here. Huh? What, Eli? No. Huh? I didn't call you. Go back to sleep. And this happens three or four times. Finally, Eli goes, oh, yeah, well, maybe God is talking to you. And when God talks to you, you say, here I am. Here's another one. Saul, Saul. Right? When Saul was going to kill Christians and Jesus came, appeared to him, and falling on the ground, he heard a voice saying to him, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And he said, who are you? He responded, and he said, I am. We'll see that in a minute. I am. That's God's name. I am. I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. Same pattern. God calls, seems to call your name twice, in rapid succession, and then you say, yes, Lord, speak, for thy servant heareth. Okay, verse 5 of Exodus. Then he said, God, the angel of the Lord in the burning bush, do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. And he said, I am. See these patterns? I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. That's about the third time we've heard that. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. That's what Isaac did. Jacob, right? Because if you looked at God, you couldn't kill you. So Moses hid his face. Verse 7. Then the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people after 400 years, who are in Egypt, and I have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings. And remember, Moses had been isolated from this for 40 years. And I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of the land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Okay, pretty good. And now, behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Come, Moses, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I? Who am I? I'm nothing. That I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? He's talking to God, and he's giving him his legitimate concern. Why me? Who am I? And look at the next verse. God said, I will be with you. That's who you are. By yourself, not much. But with God in you, with God working with you, with God having called you, yeah, you're more than a conqueror in every situation. Who am I? I will be with you. That's what counts. Treasures in earthen vessels. We're weak people. We never will be more than that. But God with us, that makes all the difference in the world, as we will see. God says to Moses, after he says, oh my, I will be with you. This is worth the whole thing here, if this is all we did today. I will be with you. You're never going to be enough on your own. I'm not. None of us are. And we're always looking at our shortcomings. Well, I'm not this. I'm not. That's not the point. The point is God is with you. Treasure the Holy Spirit in earthen vessels. And there's more. This verse is loaded. He said, I will be with you. And this shall be a sign that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of the mountain, you shall serve God on the mountain. What? I thought I was going to see some fireworks and, you know, at least the staff. And what does God say? What is the sign that they'll worship God? That's the point of everything. Worship. That's the entire reason that you're alive, all of us, that you draw breath, that we draw breath, is to glorify God. That's why God created the universe. That's why he created you. That's why he created me, to glorify him. This puts everything back in perspective. By ourselves, not much. With God, yeah, we're more than conquerors. And the purpose of life is to glorify God, because that's what worship is. Worth-ship is what it means in Old English. The purpose of life is to glorify God. You are the salt of the earth, you're the light of the world. That's why you're here. And so the point of everything that God is doing with Moses here is to take them out of Egypt so they can worship. Notice what God says about taking them out of Egypt. He doesn't say, let my people go, that they may live life the way they want. Right? Let my people go, that they can do whatever they want out there. No, he says, let my people go, that they may worship me. The modern view of freedom in America today, here it is. Freedom, and this is not the word of God, this is the American view of freedom, today's view. Because this was not Abraham Lincoln's view of freedom. Freedom is not having any master at all, not having any lord at all. It's being able to choose what you want to do and live your life the way you see fit, because it's all about me. That's not freedom. That's slavery. But this is what's driving our culture today. Freedom to do whatever you want. That's freedom. No, it's not. That's slavery. There was a great prophet. You may have heard of him. I'll tell you what he said, and then you tell me who this great prophet is. But you're going to have to serve somebody. You're going to have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you're going to have to serve somebody. Who is that? Bob Dylan. But he's right. He's absolutely right. Whether you know it or not, it may be the devil, it may be the Lord, but you're going to serve somebody. If you think you're serving yourself and doing whatever you want to do, you're serving the devil. Sorry, it's one or the other. And we know that from experience. Each one of us knows that. What John Kennedy, in his acceptance speech, or his inauguration speech, remember? He said, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. Who remembers that? Okay, or let me tell you, because it's really good. Ask not what your country can do for you. And think about the political promises today, right? Oh, we're going to give you this, 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 we're going to buy your vote. Kennedy said, don't ask what your country can do for you, but you ask what you can do for your country. Completely godly, completely biblical. It's not about what I get, it's what can I do? What can I serve? How can I help? Even if it means sacrificing my life. Verse 13. Then Moses said to God, if I come to the people of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me, they're going to say, well, what's his name? And what shall I say to them? Verse 14. Then God said to Moses, here's my name. Ready? I am who I am. I am. Eternally existent. God is outside of time. That's why he's not saying I was or I am or I will be. I am is who God is. He's outside of time. He just is. Well, who created God? Silly question. He is. He is. That's who he is. I am. What's your name? I am who I am. And he said, say this to the people, I am, has sent me. Verse 13, and here's Moses' response to all of this. Find somebody else. And his response is, okay, my Lord, send somebody else. And the anger of the Lord was kindled. And look at God's response to that. I will be with your mouth. Same thing again. Moses, of course you're not capable. Of course you're not ready. But with me, you're more than a conqueror in every situation because God is with him. He's telling Moses, who'd been hanging out in the wilderness for 40 years, that he's going to go deliver 2 million unarmed slaves against the mightiest nation in the world at that time, Egypt. Unarmed slaves are going to rise up against the most powerful nation on earth. That's what he's telling him. And Moses is going, not me. And God is saying, no, it is you. But I will be with you. Romans 8:31. What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? No, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him who has loved us. Nothing has changed. You and God are a majority in every situation. It's not a matter of political victory. Because we don't know what's going to happen with this election and with everything else going on in our nation. We don't know. But you know what? God doesn't tell you the whole story. Oh, I'll go when you give me the whole story from beginning to end, from A to Z. He doesn't do that. He gives you step A. And if you step out on step A, he'll give you step B. And on and on. He didn't tell Moses the whole story. He didn't tell Abraham the whole story. He said, just go. Are we obedient? Will we go? When God tells us the first step, will we go? Remember, Pharaoh thought that killing all the baby boys would accomplish his purpose. But it backfired. Who else tried to kill all the baby boys? Herod. That wasn't the first time, was it? Herod was trying to get rid of Jesus. So he killed all the baby boys, 2 years and under. Jesus didn't get killed. It doesn't matter what wicked kings plan to do. God's purposes still are accomplished. That was Herod. God will accomplish his purposes in spite of, with us or without us. I'd like to help. He needs some people. He doesn't do his works always or very often by, you know, miraculous earthquakes and this and that and that. He works through people who would like to work with him. Here I am. Right? Your name, your name? Yes, Lord. Here I am. Send me. This life is not all there is. And we can't live that way. We are in eternity. And what we do on earth lasts for eternity. And that's how, this is just a reminder of how we need to think about our lives. We could die. And again, I go back to Lincoln, who, if you, towards the end of his life, he became more and more of a believer. His wife had a dressmaker who used to be a slave. And she became his wife's best friend. And the Lincoln lost, they lost their youngest son, or one of their children died. And this black dressmaker, freed slave, basically ministered to Abraham Lincoln because she had lost her son, also the dressmaker. And she told him about the Lord. And if you read his speeches, they're just full of the Bible. And some people say, oh, he was an agnostic. He wasn't. He just didn't go to an organized church, but he believed. And this woman really helped him come closer to the Lord. And then he freed the slaves, won the Civil War, and what happened then? He's dead. Was his life a failure? Greatest president we've ever had. He did what he needed to do, and then he was gone. Would you rather have lived that life? Or just continued in mediocrity, like so many of us? I think I would opt for the Lincoln thing. There was another man like that named the Apostle Paul. And he brought the gospel to the entire Mediterranean world. He wrote almost half of the books in the New Testament. You know what happened to him? He was whipped 8 times with whips and with sticks. He was stoned and left for dead. And then he wrote many of his letters in the Roman dungeon. And finally, he was executed. Was his life a failure? No, it wasn't. We're still reading his letters today. So long life on earth is not what it's about. It's the quality of life. It's the obedience to God on earth. Moses, we'll find out, he never entered the promised land. He got right up, you know, to the border, and God said, you're not going. Joshua's going to bring him in. But the key to all of this is that God spoke to him face to face. See, this is later on in Exodus, but it says, thus the Lord used to speak to Moses face to face as he speaks to a friend. He spoke to Moses face to face, and Moses obeyed. And that's why Moses was the great man that he was. Put God first. Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and everything else will fall into place. And now here we have Jesus' last words before he ascended back to heaven. And look at the correspondence, the similarity between this and what God told Moses. So here's Jesus addressing his disciples and his apostles. Now the 11, because Judas was already gone, they went to Galilee, to the mountain to which Jesus had directed them. And they saw him and they worshipped him, but some doubted. And Jesus came and said to them, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go. That's what God told Moses. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son of the Holy Spirit, verse 20, teaching them to obey, to observe, to obey. Same thing. Nothing has changed. It's the same today as it was in the time of Jesus, as it was in the time of Moses, as it was in the time of Abraham, as it was in the time of Adam and Eve. God gives us his word, and he asks that we obey. Not with our mouths only, but with our actions. Teaching them to observe, teaching them to obey, how much? All that I have commanded you. And here it is. And behold, I am. am with you. Always the same. I am with you. That's who we are. God with us. And that's Jesus' name, right? Emmanuel means God with us. God can turn the world upside down, and he can use you to do it. Therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord your labor is not in vain. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths.